once again showing his versatility.
I think we have five number ones.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
But $22 million for Brian Daubeck, give me a break.
And Redmond has been thrown out of the ballgame.
NFL tight end, you know, those playing years are dog years.
Maybe it's adamantium. Maybe it's vibranium. Maybe it's something really cool I don't even know about yet. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the 300s podcast. My name is Red, and as always, I will be your host. Joining me today is Big Z. How goes it out there?
I'm doing great. Just saw the Double Dare revival last night. As a 90s kid, very excited. And I really sincerely hope that someone from Nickelodeon or Fremantle Media is listening to this. I know they got their Double Dare host, who's a YouTube personality. If they are thinking about reviving Legends of the Hidden Temple, Global Guts, whatever, you name it, I'm your man. I'm your guy. So come on, Fremantle. Give Big Z a call.
So I saw Double Dare was back, and Mark Summers was the old host, right? Did that guy have a panic attack when he saw all the Nickelodeon slime?
He was on Oprah back in the day dealing with OCD, wasn't he?
Yeah, that probably has to be the worst fucking show in the history of television to work on for a guy with OCD.
You missed a spot. No, you missed a spot. No, but I used to love that show because, you know, it's a kid's show, so they're going to ask goofy questions, but I used to love it. How many sides on a triangle? What is H2O the formula of? And then, you know, they wanted to get some physical challenges, so they'd have to mix in questions like, how many faces on a dodecahedron?
Yeah, and then you had to reach up into that gigantic nose and fish around for the flag. I'm sure that didn't make Mark Summers throw up in a trash can.
Saw that thing at the Mall of America, and I almost geeked out. I'm not one of these guys that's going to jump over the velvet rope at a museum, but it took everything not to just go up in that nose and try to find a flag. I think, you know, I'd be afraid of what would happen to me. I think I posted this on the site a couple of months ago. One of the first Double Dare tapings, they defined the flag inside a pillow with all the feathers in it. They forgot to put a flag in there twice. So that's, you know, hopefully that tape went off to the Academy for an Emmy. But yeah, I'm excited. And again, Nickelodeon, Fremantle, Legends of the Hidden Temple. You know, I was always a Blue Barracuda guy, but, you know, I can be swayed.
I feel like I would see one of those setups at a mall like that, and I would just blurt something out like I was a sleeper cell agent, not even realizing it. But I'll take the physical challenge.
And one more thing. I know it's on Nickelodeon. It's meant for kids. No, this is meant to draw back in 30-year-olds to watch that channel. And it was the first time I probably watched that channel in 10, 15 years. And they've still got Jurassic Park toy commercials on, so not much has changed.
Yeah, that is not meant for kids. Double Dare, the show from the 90s, is not meant for kids. That's meant for assholes like me and you who are sitting at home hungover on a Saturday. Watch this. I mean, MTV's doing the same thing. I saw they're rebooting shows like Daria, which I used to fucking love. It's not for today's kids. It's for guys like us.
And you know what? I'm so starved for nostalgia, I've been watching Jersey Shore again.
Yeah, I have the whole thing recorded on my DVR. I have not dove into it yet. Really just kind of saving it all for a snack.
I don't want to give you a spoiler, but Mike the Situation, not the biggest douche anymore. Seems a little bit more likable.
Yeah, I heard he drinks a lot less booze, but he's in a lot more debt.
That's not a good combo. You know, usually you pick one or the other. Yeah. Usually one causes the other.
Yeah, so, all right, so today we're going to get to a few things. Today's really going to be a grab bag of Boston and national sports news, as we've got headlines everywhere. We've got headlines everywhere from drug rings to suspensions and really back to NBA free agency. There's been a whole lot going on, so we're just kind of jump around and touch on a few things. So one of the first things I want to talk about, and I want to get your take on it a little bit, just because, you know, you don't live in Boston. You're not here day to day, so you might not be seeing the media coverage every single day. So it came out that Hanley Ramirez was allegedly Pablo Escobar, and now actually no, he's not. So this was really an incredibly frustrating story, because for anyone who consistently listens to sports talk radio, 98.5 in particular, because several of the hosts teased the fact that there was a quote-unquote explosive story brewing around Hanley, but no one wanted to touch it. So for the past 2-3 weeks, they would have guys like Felger and Jim Murray and all them saying, yeah, something's coming, something's happening. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but something's happening. And it was kind of like, we want you to know, we know, but we can't tell you what it is. So you guys just got to kind of wait for something to come out. And then ABC News reported that Hanley was involved in an ongoing state and federal investigation, which later turned out to be a gigantic drug bust. You had Michelle McPhee, who's a local reporter, who was all over Boston Airwaves talking about it, talking about Hanley's involvement and kind of the whole story, and one of his buddies got busted with fentanyl. And now apparently what happened was it was just one of his friends got pulled over by the Mass State Police and basically tried to name drop Hanley and really use it as a get-out-of-jail-free card. And then it turns out now apparently that Hanley didn't have anything to do with it, but his friends knew about it, and they were just dropping his name. So it was really a kind of a whirlwind circle, and this all started on Friday, really, so it's only been 3 days since that whole shit turned around.
Yeah, I was scrolling through Twitter on Friday night, and I saw something pop up with Hanley Ramirez, and went, whoa. And then it did come out that there was some drug investigation. Getting back to what you said, though, for a moment, with the guys in sports media kind of teasing, I know something you don't know. You know, going to school with really some of the people you see on TV, Twitter, news reporters now, you know, there's nothing that people in the media don't love more than knowing something that you don't know. And so that is just, that's just an ice cream sundae for all these sports guys. Something in their realm, you know, it's like Jerry Seinfeld talking to Constanza. What do you got, two pair? A full house? Come on, Georgie, what is it? but this is news in the Twitter era. Hints, allegations, you know, innuendo, it all gets thrown out there now, and millions of people, you know, are trying to put together the pieces constantly. And I'm not saying Michelle McPhee was wrong to do what she did, but even Hanley Ramirez, even, you know, a public figure, a ball player, is entitled to due process.
Yeah, because that's one of those things where someone might end up getting sued for slander, because while it's, you know, not necessarily a crime to report on, this guy's name's been involved because it was. But again, these are probably records that are supposed to not be public just because he wasn't arrested. He wasn't arraigned on anything. He just would had his name mentioned because one of his dumbass friends was selling drugs, trying to get it across state lines. So, you know, if you're Hanley, you could come back and say, hey, Michelle McPhee, you brought my name into this, or whoever originally reported it, whether it was ABC News or whoever it was. You could say, you brought my name into this, and then I got put on trial by, you know, the public. I got convicted by the public, and then now I have my name in the mud by the public just because of this whole whirlwind of a weekend. But with all that being said, there's definitely a reason he got cut on, I think it was, what, May 25th, and then we're sitting here on June 25th, and not a single team has so much as brought him in for a workout. Like, it wasn't just fans and reporters speculating. The entire Major League Baseball was saying, yeah, we don't want to touch this.
Yeah, it's certainly starting to look like that. And, you know, one other thing I would say, you know, Hanley's name being put into this publicly now, didn't his friend's attorney speak to the Globe on the condition of anonymity, and they wouldn't release the name of the person that was arrested either for safety reasons?
Yeah.
You know, you're throwing names out there. You know, these are not great characters. You know, I would just be awfully careful, you know, putting this out there, because the last time Michelle McPhee put a story out there like this about an athlete, it was quite the conclusion.
Yeah, yeah, and I know that the lawyer, he spoke on, you know, terms of anonymity because he didn't want to have his name released because it would connect him back to the potential client. So there's a lot of shady stuff going on here, and I know McPhee is tied into a lot of the crime reporters and, you know, cops and stuff around town. So that's probably how she got the information. And if it turns out that Hanley literally had no involvement other than just one of his friends calling him on the phone while he was pulled over, then she might be, you know, seeing some less sources than she normally would moving forward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And, you know, just again going back to what you said, Hanley Ramirez, I understood the reason the Red Sox cut him and they moved on. But if this is what is preventing him from getting another job and he truly doesn't have anything to hide, you know, that'd be an interesting lawsuit, lost wages and so on and so on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that, I mean, to your point, that could be a good argument to what I'm about to say. But the Red Sox came out, or, you know, they didn't come out, but it was reported that they said they had no knowledge of this situation. That's not why they cut him. It was still a baseball decision. And if that's true, then that's a huge coincidence. But If it's not, like you said, that could be a lawsuit, wrongful termination, on top of the fact that he's probably already going to have the Players Association filing a grievance that they basically cut him because they didn't want to pay him next year.
Well, and it brings back one more thing, how it went back to Alex Cora a month ago, that it was partly his decision for the team to move on. And I think you and I were discussing, oh yeah, maybe it's that way so it doesn't look like a blatant salary dump. But, you know, if there's other stuff going on, it's even more important that Cora get out there and say, look, this is a baseball decision. I was a part of this. It's, you know, if it's not Mike Socha, it is very unusual for the manager to come out and take that much responsibility for decision-making, especially with a guy like Dave Dombrowski as his boss. Dombrowski makes all the decisions. Dombrowski is the big swinging dick at the cracker factory. He does not take input from others. It is his ass on the line, and he's the one making the decision. So, you know, I just go back to Alex Cora taking credit for some of this decision. Not credit, but responsibility. This is not a dig at Cora, but it was unusual, and now it looks even more unusual, or, you know, maybe the pieces are starting to go together a little bit better.
Yeah, and it's not even something that Cora would take credit or blame for, nor should he. This is literally, I feel like Dombrowski does that a lot. He kind of deflects criticism on a lot of his moves, and this kind of, you know, has the perk of the benefit of saying it was a baseball move, the manager wanted it, so you can't sue me. But also, if it goes to shit and Hanley goes and hits 400 a la Manny Ramirez in L.A. a couple years ago, then he could say, oh, you know, we were kind of on the fence, but Cora really wanted it.
Yeah, I'll say this. If or when Hanley does resurface with another team, I don't think he has as much left in the tank as Manny did, but we'll see.
Now, speaking of the Red Sox, we've got a lot to digest with this team. The Red Sox, they are still a top three team as of the ESPN polls this morning that I read, and they're still tied for the best record in baseball at 52-27 as of today, June 25th. So they're still one of the top teams in baseball, and they're gunning for 100 plus wins. I know you were saying they're on pace for how many wins?
I think it's 107 approximately if you extrapolate a .658 winning percentage over 162 games.
Which is insane to think about, because as good as they might be, a 107-win team, this does not feel like a 107-win team. Like, you feel like if your team, if you said at the beginning of the year, this team's going to challenge for 110 wins, you would say, wow, they're going to be a fucking juggernaut, and I just don't really feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, they don't feel like a juggernaut, especially when they split a series in Seattle where they really could have had three of four, especially when they lose two out of three to a pretty lousy Minnesota Twins team. You know, so they're 5-5 in their last 10, but if you go back to the beginning of their last road trip, I know we're picking arbitrary numbers, but if you go back to the beginning of their last road trip and you include the three-game set this weekend against Seattle at home, they're 8-5 over the last 13. You know, it doesn't look super impressive, but 8-5 is a .615 winning percentage. You know, if they keep that up the rest of the way, you know, they've got 83 games left. That gets them about 51 wins. You know, they don't have to play as hot as they played the first 79 games, but if they play as hot as they played the last 2 weeks, they're still going to win 103. So, I mean, I didn't do the math out, but even if they just go .500 the rest of the way, that's still going to put them at 95 wins now that I do the math on the fly. So, and I think they're going to play better than .500. They've just got too much talent on that roster. But I guess, you know, what I'll say to kind of sum it up, when you start out 17-2 and you have stretches where you go 5-5 and 6-4 over 10 games, let's say, yeah, it's going to be disappointing because, you know, we've seen them 15 games over .500 2.5 weeks into the season. So I think the fans have been a little bit spoiled that I think, you know, they weren't going to win 130 games. So, you know, we're going to see stretches where they go 5-5, 6-4 over 10 games. But again, I think they've just got far too much talent to go into a prolonged dip. And, you know, I think they would probably still make the playoffs even if they didn't win 100 games. But yeah, it'd be really disappointing to see them win 97 and be a wild card.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like they went the way of the Mets. I mean, the Mets came out of the gates on fire. They started, I think, 11-1. And then since then, they've been one of the worst teams in baseball. And they're in the goddamn basement. The Red Sox are still...
Yeah, they're right there with the Miami Marlins.
Oh, they're awful. And the Sox on this, you know, this year, they still have a .658 win percentage. And I'm just kind of looking at their overall win-loss records over the years. And, you know, unsurprisingly, the years they won some of the most games they've won recently were the years they won the World Series. So going back to 2013, that was the last time. That was the last jump up in wins they had. They had 97 in 2013. That's the year they won the World Series. Obviously, they were a shitty year before that. They kind of were up and down a couple years before that. And then just going back to what's the next highest win total they had, and that would be 96, and then in 07 when they won. Then you go back again, and the next highest is 98 when they won in 04. And these, like, just to point this out, you get 98 wins, they won the World Series. They had 96 wins, they won the World Series. They had 97 wins, they won the World Series. Now we're talking about a team that might win 107 games, and we still aren't confident about them. That's crazy. And I think that kind of speaks to something that they've been talking about a lot around town recently, is just, is it the Sox are just very good and we just don't realize it yet? Like, you know, a lot of times you'll look back on a season and say, oh, wow, we should have realized they were great way sooner. Or is it the fact that there's been so many teams just kind of punting on the regular season where there's not really so much of a middle class anymore? Like, you look at the Orioles, they're 28 games back and we're not even in July yet.
Yeah, I think it's a little column A, a little of column B. You know, you look at some of these divisions, the AL Central, the Cleveland Indians, you know, they're doing better as of late, but they're just 43-33. They're up 8 games over the Twins. They're going to, you know, they could win 85 games and run away with that division. I think you're right. There's no more middle class because there's no money in the middle class. If you're going to draw 30,000 if you win 70 games or 90 games and miss the playoffs, you know, save the money on the payroll. You're still going to sell the same amount of beer and hot dogs. And then, to your other point, I think it is the Red Sox just have been that good for that long. Look, if you go to some guy's house or you go to the bar and you have a strong drink, ooh, that's going to taste strong at first. But you get a couple of them, or the Red Sox, you know, they won the division a couple years in a row. It's not going to impress you anymore. You're going to need to see something in the postseason from this team. So I go back to 03, 04 when this Red Sox-Yankees rivalry was white hot. You know, they were battling it out in the postseason every year. You wouldn't even know the Red Sox are in a pennant race right now in Boston, just because I think fans, they've had enough of the appetizer, and with no middle class now, you know, we just got to wait around 3 months to see what happens in October. They're going to the playoffs. You know, I can't see them going into a ditch and not making the playoffs. They're up 14 games on the Rays, who are in third place in the East. I know a couple other wildcard teams are a little bit closer, but there's just too much ground to make up. I'm on the record. The Red Sox are in.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's no way they're going to miss the playoffs, but talk about a bad year to be in the AL East. You might win 100 games, you might win the wild card, and you could be out after one day.
I hope neither of these things happen, but I think the stock market would drop 10,000 points in a day before the Red Sox miss the playoffs this year.
Now, when you're saying miss the playoffs, do you mean miss them entirely, or do you mean losing the wild card round?
No, if they get the wild card, that's shit luck, but that's baseball. If they have to be if they're the wild card with 98 wins, you know, I'm not going to hold that against them. But yeah, I think it is more likely that the stock market drops 10,000 in a day than the Red Sox miss the playoffs this season. And by the way, I hope neither happen. You know, I don't need the value of my house going down.
That's what you get for buying, you dumbass. Now, it's going to be funny watching the Red Sox chase these triple-digit wins, because I'm just kind of looking through their numbers now in Baseball Reference, and unless I'm missing it, the last time I see them winning 100 games was 1946, when they won 104 games.
Right.
And it looks like they've only done it three times in the history of the franchise. So even if it's the team that you're not loving, David Price is an asshole, he plays too much Fortnite, it feels like a bit of an overrated team, it's an inflated record. If they win 100 games for the fourth time in 100-plus years, that's impressive.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I would love to see them go for it because, you know, it seemed like when that Yankee dynasty was going strong 15, 20 years ago, even after they stopped winning World Series with the Paul O'Neill, Scott Brosius crew, they'd still win 100 games every year, it felt like. And I've never seen the Red Sox do it in my lifetime, so I'd love to see them go for it. But I'm glad that they don't have guys like Josh Beckett on the team saying how fun it would be to win 100 games. You know, let us worry about that, guys. You don't need to.
Yeah. Now, speaking of starting pitchers that, you know, been pretty dominant for the Red Sox, Chris Sale's a guy that has been gunning guys down, and I think on the last couple of podcasts we talked about, at least in April and May, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, and we think that was pretty much almost intentional, really kind of saving some bullets for the end of the season, where last year he kind of ran out of gas. Now, he's kind of back to his old self. He was striking out a dozen guys the last couple times out in his starts. And he's still struggling to get that run support. And it's just, like, if he had consistent run support, he'd win 25 games a year with this team. But it seems like every time he goes out, he strikes out a dozen guys, goes seven innings, and the Sox lose 2-0.
Yeah, his run support this year has been about 3.99 runs per start. So that's less than 4 runs a game, and that's less than their average this year. They're scoring just over 5 runs a game, so almost a run and a half less when he's on the mound. And, you know, who knows what the reason is. I don't think there's really anything behind it. Again, it's baseball. It's a long season. You know, things are going to shake out weird at some point. But I will say this. Sale is 7-4. 2.56, a 2.5 ERA. The Red Sox are 9-8 in his 17 starts. That's going to work itself out. That the ship is going to be righted. They were 22-10 in his 32 starts last year. So if they were 22-10 in his starts again this year, that would put them at 11-2 the rest of the way when he pitches. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, I could easily see them going 8-4 in his starts the rest of the way. And that would put him a little bit more in line with where he should be for how good he has been.
Yeah, and it helps that you've had guys like Bryce who, since he put down the clicker, stopped playing Fortnite, he's actually been pitching very well his last 6 or 7 starts out there. And I was following along, and this is my mistake for basically reading quotes and not listening to them, not getting the context for it. He had a quote, I think it was last week, just saying, where, oh, yeah, do you think you're going to be an all-star? And he, in reading the quote, says, no, I don't think I'm going to be an all-star. I think there's a lot of guys on this team that are more able. They deserve that more than I do. And he's just saying, oh, yeah, if they pick me to be in the all-star game, I'll just say I can't. I'm going to play Fortnite that night. And I kind of got a chuckle out of that. I'm like, oh, he's kind of becoming self-aware. And then I heard the quote, and he's just being a fucking asshole. He's, like, cutting off reporters. He's coming out. He's doing the whole martyr thing. He's saying, woe is me. So it's just a guy that he's pitching great. I hope he continues to pitch great just because the team needs it. But holy shit, this is why I'm glad I did not buy a David Price T-shirt when you signed on.
And, you know, I don't like the image of a pampered athlete with a dozen different handlers. This is a dude that could use a PR guy, a PR guru, just somebody that he will listen to and just say, David, this is going to be a whole lot easier if you stop acting like a dick.
Yeah, he needs his own pizza boy to tell him when to shut the fuck up.
Absolutely. But to your point, if we step aside from the start he had in Minnesota last Wednesday night, the Red Sox won 7 of his starts in a row. And so, you know, he's doing something right if the Sox won 7 of his starts in a row after that disastrous outing in Texas. And, yeah, the Red Sox lost on Wednesday night in Minnesota, but, you know, Price went 6 innings, 3 runs. Not a great start, but technically quality, so it's not as if that was an implosion. So, yeah, your point, his last 8 starts have been pretty steady. So, if that does fall off, you know, hopefully Chris Sale, I don't even want to say that Chris Sale will be there to pick up the slack. I'm hoping the rest of the Red Sox, I hope everything evens out. So if Price kind of cools off, you know, that 9-8 record with Sale on the mound, you know, hopefully that's 15-10 not too long.
Yeah, and I hope it's not a case of Price just cruising through the middle of the season when it's not really super important, because we've seen him when he's even admitted it. When you get to the playoffs, when the lights are shining brightest, he's a, what did he say? He's a duck. He looks calm, but he's got his feet turned under the water. Like, why the fuck would you say that? Why would you admit that you're that phased by the pressure of the playoffs? So that, I think, until you prove me wrong otherwise, I don't have faith in you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he needs a guy. He needs a guy that just says, hey, David, this is what you're going to say. Even if it's fake, phony lines, just to be a little bit self-deprecating, which he is not or whatnot. But, you know, when he makes these statements, you know, I guess the guys say he's a good teammate, but
because he buys them toys.
It's hard to picture a guy like that having a friend in the world.
Well, that's exactly, he's the rich kid. all the guys on the team say he's a great guy. And they're like, well, that's because he buys them Beats headphones and custom Nike Air Jordans, whatever the hell he's buying them. And then he comes out, and anytime anyone says anything negative about his teammates, he freaks out and tries to fight the fucking broadcaster on the plane. So, of course, they're gonna like him. But he's like the rich kid in school. If your friend's going to buy you shit, when David Price stops buying people custom Nikes and stops buying them Beats headphones, then that'll be something else to see. What I'm curious to see is if he implodes in the playoffs and throws someone under the bus. Like, say someone makes a Tony Graffinino error at second base to lose his first potential playoff win. See if he says, oh, well, Nunez over there fucked me. See, then it'll turn on him.
I haven't played organized baseball in 20 years, but I lived with a rich kid in college, and it was a lot of fun in Best Buy.
Yeah. Swipe, swipe, swipe.
Hey, you know, MVP Baseball 06, that's with college guys. That's kind of funny. Let's play MVP 06 with a bunch of no-names, but there's 300 teams. Yeah, that's a great idea.
MVP 05, still the greatest sports game of all time.
It's that and NBA Jam. It's close.
Mm-hmm. All right, now let's switch gears a little bit. So let's head over to the NFL and the Patriots specifically. Now, as we talked about on one of our recent podcasts, Julian Edelman got popped for a failed PED test, and he is now appealing his 4-game suspension for that test. And it seems like Edelman will not go quietly into that night. It seems like he's really getting ready to fight the suspension for a while. There's an ESPN story that came out today that's saying he is really ready to go the distance. And it's not so much that he's fighting the fact that he tested positive, which is interesting. It seems like he's fighting more so the way the test was handled, a la Ryan Braun. If you remember, Braun pretty much went out and attacked the actual employee who did the test, saying this guy's a moron and tried to wreck his career. Not to say Edelman's going that way, but looking at the excerpt from ESPN, it's saying, quote, involves a mishandling of the documentation and delivery of Edelman's test results. During the course of the investigation, it was learned that the NFL made mistakes in the manner in which the test results were handled. Edelman is arguing that the mishandling of the evidence is one of the reasons he should be exonerated. So it seems like Edelman is basically saying, you assholes can't prove anything, so I'm taking the fifth.
Deny, accuse. We've seen it work with other famous people in this country as of late. I mean, this is like fighting a speeding ticket and blaming it on the red light cam. No, that wasn't accurate. It's not a great look, but if you're a Patriots fan, good luck, because I'm looking at the other wide receivers on the roster right now. Future Hall of Famers Chris Hogan, Jordan Matthews, Malcolm Mitchell, Kenny Britt, Philip Dorsett, Braxton Berrios. I can go on. Good luck, Julian. The team needs you. This is starting to look an awful like 2006. Wide receivers? We don't need wide receivers.
Get that wide-eyed fuck Rashay Caldwell. He'll be fine. He's like a trash can out there.
I watched that video as I was writing this down. I used to work with high school kids. High school kids wouldn't drop that.
Yeah, and that was one of the most painful.
I used to chuck the ball around with my pals. You know, I knew guys that would make that catch and then get thrown into a chain-link fence.
And that was why, directly after that, that offseason was the biggest offseason the Patriots have ever had in the history of their franchise. We kind of hosed you on that one, Tom. We'll go out, we'll get Wes Welker, we'll get Jabbar Gaffney, we'll get Randy fucking Moss for you, and then we'll go 16-0 before. I don't remember what happened after that, but, you know, it was a pretty good season.
Yeah, I think it was lost in translation.
Yeah, I don't know. I lost cable. But, so Edelman is challenging this suspension, and it could go a couple different ways. One, when it initially came out that he had tested positive, there were reports that the NFL didn't really even know what he tested positive for. So was it something new that they couldn't prove he actually did anything? Was it something that technically wasn't illegal? So how can you suspend him for that? Or was it, you know, just the chemist playing games with the numbers where it's technically a little bit different, but it's still a banned substance? We don't know yet. But we have former Colts president Bill Polian, unsurprisingly, playing the righteous asshole card about the entire thing. He was on ESPN saying, quote, the policy says players are responsible for what they take, end quote, conveniently leaving out the fact that the player that made his career in Peyton Manning was getting cases of HGH shipped to his wife in a strip mall in Indianapolis.
Nothing wrong with that. No, Bill Polian is a bitter loser. You know, how many times did the Patriots beat his brain in, you know, aside from 2006?
Yeah.
What did Robert Kraft say? Envy is an incurable disease.
Yeah, and it's funny because ESPN is full of guys like that, just players and executives that the Patriots had beat up on over the years. And that's what makes it, when you see guys like Teddy Bruschi and Rodney Harrison on TV, it seems like they're being homers, where a lot of times it looks like they're just kind of combating the homerism from the other side. We're not just trying to defend the Patriots. It's just like every argument you make is so blindly just kind of bitter to the entire Patriots organization, where there was what was it? Oh, it was one of the guys on ESPN was saying that Julian Edelman's defense for his PED suspension was going to be that his test sample was deflated, and they all started laughing their balls off like it was the funniest thing they ever heard.
Yeah, that's one of the more original lines I've ever heard, guys. But, yeah, you're right. Teddy Bruschi has to be there to offset Bill Polian, and then Rodney Harrison is there to offset Tony Dungy over on NBC. And I think you're right. They look like homers just because they're not so rabidly anti-Patriot.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'll see how that turns out. I think that's going to be an uphill battle, especially with the NFL seems to love to bring the hammer down on the Patriots. Whether you think it's justified or not, it's true. They have come down hard on the Patriots, and with all the shit that Brady and the Patriots put the league through last time around with Deflategate and how hard they fought it, whether you thought they should have or not, the fact that it became such a public story, they took it to friggin' federal court, they made the NFL look bad, they're not going to be kind to Edelman. They're going to take every opportunity they can to just slam this down and make him swallow his medicine.
The rule book says players are responsible for what they put in their bodies. The rule book does not say the NFL has to prove which substance it is.
Yeah. The NFL can pretty much prove anything. It's like playing with numbers. They will make it stick regardless. Now, jumping around to another one of our topics we wanted to discuss. The biggest topic in the NBA right now is LeBron's free agency. This is a guy that is brilliant in the way he's structured his contracts over the years. He really is the pioneer of the 1+1 contract. He would go in, and just because of he's the best player in the world, he had the leverage to do so. He would go in and say, all right, well, I'll sign a 2-year contract, 1-year deal with the 1-year player option. And basically what it did, especially with Cleveland the last 4 years, was it allowed him to keep the pressure on Cleveland to keep building the team and keep improving and keep spending, but more so keep doing what I want you to do. So that's something he's been doing for years, and that's why his free agency seems to come up every 6 months. But reports came out today that LeBron doesn't want a recruiting circus. ESPN said that he has no intention of hearing elaborate pitch meetings from teams. So he really doesn't want to go through the entire show of having the what would we call it, the Vinny Chase presentation.
Yeah, McDonald's, Apple, Coca-Cola, LeBron James.
Yeah, so he's at least had it leaked out there that he doesn't want to go through all that. And look, I get it. Who would want to make a big circus around the biggest decision of their lives? Like, the last thing you want as a guy trying to decide his future is to have the ultimate and difficult decision you make be out on live TV. That's a decision you want to make with your wife and family, not with, like, you know, Jim Gray on national TV. That would be crass.
Jim Gray, you know, after what he did to Pete Rose, you know, he still has a pretty good relationship with LeBron James and Tom Brady. Interesting guy. But, yeah, LeBron has to say that. He doesn't want it to be a circus, but you know, maybe it won't have a half-hour infomercial on ESPN this summer, but it will be, and, you know, it probably should be. He is the greatest player in the league today, and so, there, you know, the whole league kind of revolves around him.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting to watch, because as much as I rail on LeBron, I'm not a blind Boston sports fan dummy. I do like to take a step back and kind of, you know, just look at what I'm saying, because as much as I'm shitting on the guy for saying being hypocritical, and it's kind of ironic how he doesn't want the circus now, where on the other side you could just say, Well, yeah, he did that when he went to the Heat, and he got fucking roasted for it for the next decade. So now he maybe might have learned from that and said, no, I'll just sign on the dotted line, and I'll tell you guys about it the next day.
Well, on the one hand, it's definitely self-serving, and it's typical LeBron for something like that to quote-unquote get leaked. But at least he's leaking the right answer this time.
Yeah. And then he's also a guy that likes to say the right thing, but because it's what he's supposed to say, it just, a lot of times it sounds so disingenuous. Like, he'll say something, oh, that sounds great. And then he gets up and he's wearing his suit with his shorts, and you're just like, oh, this guy's an asshole.
Well, you know what? You know, just to kind of cross-reference, I wish David Price would at least try to say the right things. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, we don't have that blind hatred for LeBron, even as Boston sports fans. You know, 3-6 in the finals, yeah, that's something to poke fun at. But really, I'd rather be 3-6 in the finals than 1-0, which is what the Celtics are, or 1-1, what the Celtics are the last 30 years. Or I'd rather be 3-6 than 3-0, quite honestly. You know, when the guy doesn't win at all, he gets close. I don't understand why we should punish guys for taking teams that aren't ready or really weren't that good further than anyone else would have. It's kind of the same thing with Brady. Thank God Brady's 5-3 instead of 3-5. But it's the same thing. We're going to bust his balls for getting a team there that didn't deserve to be there? Give me a break. You know, some of those teams that lost in Super Bowl, Brady wouldn't have sniffed the playoffs without him. Same with LeBron. They wouldn't have sniffed the finals without him.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things where you can really just play with numbers, because people will roast him forever for having lost that many finals when, oh, Michael Jordan went 6-0, but Bill Russell won 11 rings, and no one mentions him ever talking about the greatest player. It always starts at Michael Jordan. So,
and Michael Jordan couldn't beat the Celtics, the Lakers, or the Pistons. He had to wait for Bird, Johnson, and the Pistons dynasty to kind of evaporate in the early 90s. So it's not like he came into the league and started kicking ass immediately. It took him 6-7 years.
Yeah, so while I still think MJ is the best, I can totally understand the argument for LeBron, just because single-handedly getting those teams there is impressive. I know a lot of people made the argument, if you switched out just even this year, LeBron and Durant, do you think Durant takes the Cavs all the way to the finals? Like, I don't know. I don't know if he fights back against the Celtics like that. But going back to what I was saying about LeBron, as much as I give him shit, as much as I think he likes to make a show of things,
he's earned it.
Yeah, but he is mentally tough in the sense that, one, the guy's never done anything bad in his life. He's never been arrested. He's never been in trouble. Never been cheating on his wife that, you know, we know about. Never gotten into any real kind of trouble. But the guy's mentally tough in the fact that he's been in the national headlines since he was 16. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was 16. And he, if anyone should have cracked, it should have been that guy. Whereas you get David Price, who is a fucking pitcher who plays once every 5 days, and then someone busts his balls because he has a bad game, and he just can't take it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think LeBron takes far too much grief, more than he deserves. I think the people that bust his balls for being 3-6 in the finals were the people that really weren't on his side anyway, so I don't think they're totally unbiased.
But before I give LeBron too much credit, never forget Game 6. He went down. I thought he blew his ACL out. I really honestly believed that. And then he got up, sprinted, fadeaway, step back, three-pointer. LeBron, come on.
Well, now, you know what the argument's going to be. Paul Pierce in a wheelchair for 10 minutes.
I know. You can't fucking win. All right, is there anything else we want to talk about? I know I had one thing I wanted to jump in just with upcoming 300s news. Is there anything else you wanted to chit-chat about before that?
I want to hear the 300s news.
All right, so big news for the 300s. Maybe we'll do a little drum roll. I'll put that in post. But we had teased this a while back. We had been working on we had done a couple T-shirts, but we were working on something that, you know, you can wear every day. And we finally got the final materials starting to arrive at 300's headquarters. So we will have the official hat of the 300s up for sale on the blog by the end of the week. So keep an eye out for some pictures of that coming out soon. We're going to be finalizing everything on that in the next few days. So keep checking back on the Facebook page, on the blog, and these sexy hats will be ready to go before 4th of July weekend.
That sounds great. The official hat for your barbecue, your tailgate, or the 300 company softball game, which I think we're going to have to put together this summer too.
Oh yeah, we got to organize that. We got to organize the baseball classic. 300 is going to start sponsoring shit. I got a bunch of these things, so I'm going to be handing them out like I'm running for mayor, really.
Just got to go to Staples, get the big banner. Just, you know, go to BC or BU or Northeastern. Get one of those dorms out there. They will hang, not one of the dorms, one of the frats. They will hang up anything. They would hang up a Michelob Light sign if you gave it to them. So, you know, maybe you can get the 300s logo plastered all over Pratt Street.
And if anyone is listening that runs a business like this and would like to sponsor the 300s podcast, please email the300sred@gmail.com and we will get back to you promptly. Now, if you even moderately enjoyed what you listened to, please rate, review, and subscribe to 300s podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere else you might listen to your podcasts. All right, guys, thanks for listening to another episode of the 300s podcast, and we'll see you next time.